Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by BarkBox, a monthly box of high-quality, fun, and healthy goodies for your dog delivered right to your door. Save 20% off when you sign up for a new subscription. Visit BarkBox.com/know-how. That's BarkBox.com/know-how. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code KNOWHOW. On this episode of KNOWHOW, we're ending up Project Predator, plus Brian's going to show you how to load out Destiny. It's the Twit Show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I'm Father Robert Ballaser.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
For the next half hour, 35 minutes, 45, 50, maybe
however long it takes to 3 hours.
The knowledge. Yeah, as long as it takes to fill the knowledge hole, that's as long as we're going to be doing this to make sure you can get up to date with all the projects that we've been geeking out to. But first, Brian, there was a little story that I covered on Padres Corner this last week about how FedEx is upgrading their fleet to make them greener and more efficient.
And when you say fleet, I wasn't really aware of how all-encompassing that is. Because they deliver packages all over the world, and it's a lot of stuff.
It really is. I mean, when you think about it, FedEx is basically like a military force.
Right.
They've got 700 aircraft, and that's everything from the huge 777s down to the little puddle jumpers. And they've got something like 47,000 ground vehicles.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. I mean, honestly, if you think about it, what you need to move that many packages across the world so quickly, when I can have a package that was sent out from Chicago by tomorrow morning.
Right.
You've got to have some logistical
support. It's definitely something I've been taking for granted. It's just like, oh yeah, Amazon Prime, 2-day shipping. Why isn't it here yet? Jeez.
And why is it so expensive? I know, exactly. And I send something with FedEx, I'm like, wait, $7 to send it to New York? This is outrageous.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, they burn 1.5 billion gallons of fuel every year.
That is insane.
It's an insane amount, which is why every little bit helps.
Right. You were saying just shaving off a couple of percentages is actually saves millions, tens of millions of dollars.
Like, for example, they changed some of their planes. So they dumped some of the older 727s and they're replacing them with 757s. They're dumping their old MD-11s and replacing them with 777s. It's, you know, even though they're expensive planes, over the long haul, the fact that you get 5-6 more percentage points of efficiency per mile, per pound carried, that's huge. Like, over the life of a single plane, that'll be like $30 million.
Right.
For example, they changed the policy. When pilots power up their planes, they use what's called an APU. Alex, do you have an APU on your plane?
I do not. I do not have a plane either.
But when he does get a plane, he might.
Alex, this is the internet. You could have a plane if you... Alex, do you have a plane? Thank you. Alex does have a plane. There it is right there.
He stole a FedEx plane.
That's why my package didn't arrive. But they've got these APU, the auxiliary power units, which are essentially small, teeny tiny little turbines.
Right, that help the plane start up?
Right. It provides power and it provides boost air so that you can get the other turbines started up. Yeah. But they normally power the planes off of that. So that when they park the plane, they'll leave it running for 30 minutes or so to get everything off, and then they'll shut it down. Mm-hmm. And then when they do their pre-flight, they start it up for about 30 minutes before the flight. Well, they stopped that. They said, okay, you're going to run off of external power all the way up to the point where you pull back and all the way up to the point where you come in. And then just doing that across the fleet saves about 1 million gallons of fuel a month.
That's crazy.
Just that one little thing. And so they've move from the planes, the 700 planes, to the 47,000 vehicles. And what they've decided is to go hybrid.
Hybrid. But this isn't hybrid in the sense like a Prius, right? With the It's an electric motor, but it's also attached to a, what is it, a diesel turbine?
A diesel turbine, right. So in a Prius, you have what's called a parallel hybrid system. Mm-hmm. So you've got a battery that supplies power to an electric motor. The electric motor can typically take you up to like 25, 30, maybe right. 40 miles an hour if you kind of
That's why Priuses it. Are silent killers That's in the parking garage.
Like, it's just for motorcyclists. Who cares
sneak
about
up
them?
On me. Yeah. But then after that, the gasoline engine kicks in because it needs a little bit more
right.
power.
Right, and that's because the torque curves are completely different. On an electric motor, you start with a lot of torque, and then it mm-hmm. comes down. And on a gas motor, you start with no torque, and it slowly spools up. Mm-hmm. So as you get past a certain mile per hour zone, it will kick in the gas engine. And the gas engine is physically linked. It has a link in the transmission right. so that it can add its power to the electric motor and give you the power you need to drive.
But this FedEx vehicles, it's the turbine engine giving power to the electric motor.
Right, that's just, all it is.
Yeah,
right.
It's just
so
charging.
There's no physical linkage. There's no transmission connection between the turbine and the electric motor. So what they've done is they've used these teeny tiny small diesel turbines, like the APUs in planes.
Which are really efficient.
Crazy yeah. efficient when you run them just for that. Because right. Remember, you want to run an engine in its gold zone. There's always mm-hmm. some RPM where it is the maximum amount of power developed for the amount of fuel that you're putting in.
Peak performance of the air and gas ratio and stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah. So what they've done is they've taken a truck, they stripped it out, they put in an electric engine, they put a 39 kilowatt hour battery, which is not a lot. That will go maybe 30 miles yeah. on charge. But then they've hooked it up to a diesel turbine hooked up to a generator. And the generator can provide enough power to that system to both charge the battery and power the motor.
That's pretty cool.
Which means you only have to run it every once in a while. So right. if I'm driving a 12-hour day, I'm on battery for 8 hours of that, and mm-hmm. I'm on the turbine for 4 hours of that.
Right. Okay.
And what they found is it's ridiculously efficient, like crazy. They got two of these things from Rightspeed last
Right, which
year.
Is in Silicon Valley?
Right. It's a company located here that's all about green vehicles, but green commercial vehicles, not the little consumer ones. Oh. And they are not releasing their figures, probably because they don't want UPS to catch on. But after ordering two and running them in a fleet for a year, the maintenance cost, the fuel cost, and the overall cost of ownership is so low that they've ordered 25 more.
Wow.
And if it matches up, I mean, if they use these things for a couple of years, they're probably going to replace the entire fleet.
Well, just trying to imagine this fleet on such a scale where just a few percentages saves that much is kind of mind-blowing for me. But also, I like the fact that green ideas are being innovated out of this sort of thing. Like,
yeah.
Green for money green, you know? Like, that's the best way to spearhead some of this technology.
Turbines have been used in the past. I remember you saw Jay Leno's rocket bike.
Yes.
Yeah. But, see, that uses a physical linkage.
It does. And it needs to spool up.
Yeah.
And it's like from 1 to 40 miles per hour, it doesn't really make that much power. But then once you get up to a higher speed, it sucks in more air, so right. it goes faster.
And that's because a turbine, even more than a piston engine, mm-hmm. needs to be spinning at its efficient speed before it can actually make power.
Right.
So trying to transfer that crazy amount of power through a transmission is just an invitation to break gears and have really expensive, heavy stuff.
Right, because you're saying the M1 Abrams tanks are powered on a turbine engine?
Yeah, diesel turbines. But it's not an electrical linkage. It's a physical linkage.
Right,
which means
those have to be super strong.
Right. And if you've ever heard an M1 Abrams, they have a very distinctive sound because a regular tank with a big diesel engine, it sounds like a Mack truck. It's blah, 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 blah. An M1 Abrams sounds like a jet aircraft. It's just a high-pitched whine, and then you see this massive piece of metal just that's scuttling through the desert.
Sounds kind of frightening. I'm actually yeah. all right without having heard that.
But, maybe this might be the tech for the future. Turbines at their most efficient combined with electrical
matched
engines
up to
at
a
their
battery.
Most efficient. Matched up with a battery.
Yeah, I think that's probably the way things will go for a while. It seems also kind of like a stopgap until batteries become more efficient or like solar or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and I think that's, you've hit it on the head. The Achilles heel of electric vehicles right now is storage of power.
Right.
You could carry more batteries, but every time you add batteries,
weight,
you add weight.
And then that sucks up more power.
Right. So. Right. So as soon as they get us the tiny little thumb-sized battery that's like a zero-point module that can right. power a city, you'll be driving 100 miles an hour in your electric car.
Well, if they could get it to a point where it's super efficient to have just a little turbine engine attached to, like, a battery on a motorcycle or something, you fill that up every once in a while.
I wonder if maybe we could make turbines a know-how project.
We could do that, right? Right? Mm. We have like, a plane segment that we're thinking of doing.
And I haven't caught shrapnel in the brick house for quite a while, so...
No, I think we've got...
I think we're good to go.
You know that little no days without an accident? I think we're...
We're due.
We're due. We need to reset that again. Oh. Here it comes.
Whoa!
Alex, did you leave the keys in your FedEx plane?
Well, folks, we love geeking out over future tech and future vehicles, but let's take just a small break to talk about the first sponsor of Know How, and that's BarkBox.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of delivering packages.
I know. This is a package you'll love to have delivered each and every single month. Now, we're both dog lovers, right?
Oh, yeah, totally.
You know, I wouldn't say this in front of Debbie because she's a cat lover. But
it's okay. She's not listening.
Yeah, she's not listening. Mm-hmm. I like dogs more than I like cats.
I used to. I've warmed up to cats, but yes.
Yeah, and I always want to treat them well. I want to give them everything they want. That face that they can put on, the Doge face of...
They always look so sad.
So I want to give them a treat. I want to give them something to play with. I want to give them something that at least makes me feel better that I'm pampering my best friend.
But I want it to be healthy, and I want them to be entertained. And
exactly.
This is all put together for them.
I want them to be healthy. I want them to be entertained. But I also don't have a lot of time, so I need something that will be delivered to me each and every single month.
You just want the love.
I want the love. That means I want the BarkBox. That's right. BarkBox is a way to get healthy treats, very cool toys, and a little bit of love for your pet each and every single month. BarkBox is a monthly subscription of high-quality, fun, and healthy toys, treats, and goodies for your dog. Each BarkBox contains 4 to 6 awesome, full-size products, everything from innovative toys and gadgets to an all-natural, healthy set of treats and more. Each BarkBox is new and different, full of great surprises for your dog, including unique products that you won't find at your typical big-box pet store. Your dog deserves the best. This is Ozzy. I mean, Ozzy deserves the studio. This is his studio. And all treats are sourced from the United States and Canada. Chews are made in the USA, Canada, South America, Australia, and New Zealand. So you know you're going to get something that they're actually going to love, and that's not going to hurt them. BarkBox edible products do not include rawhide or anything processed with formaldehyde. I mean, when I think about my bud, I don't want my bud chewing on stuff that's, you know, going to kill him. Oh, rest assured, everything is paw-tested by their office pups because they love dogs as much as we do, and we know that your dogs will love it because, well, our dogs do. Now, here's how it works. Go to BarkBox.com/knowhow and select Get Started. Then select the size of your dog and choose between 4 different subscription plans. We've got a special offer for fans of KnowHow. You can save 20% off when you sign up for a new subscription at BarkBox.com/knowhow. That's BarkBox.com/knowhow. BarkBox also gives 10% of their revenues to local rescues and shelters across the United States and Canada so that your subscription will help dogs in need. That's BarkBox.com/knowhow. And we thank BarkBox for their support of KnowHow.
I like to spoil Tibbs.
My bud.
My buddy.
My bud.
So that he'll love me more than...
Although,
everyone else.
Your dog's really dense. He's got the weight of the dying sun.
He's dense, and he's lopsided. So it's like one end of him is way heavier than the other, so you try and pick him up.
You brought him here once, and I was doing that, oh, come here, boy, and so he jumps up, and I'm like, oh!
Yeah, he's way heavier than he looks.
Well, because he's a little corgi, and you think, oh, he's so cute.
Because I give him all those healthy treats.
He's all muscle.
Yeah.
Your dog's got guns, son.
If he was a human, he would. Yeah.
Speaking of guns, you know, I feel like getting my FPS on.
Yes.
And you stopped by to help me figure out how I need to load up my character in a brand new game called
Destiny. You could say it's your destiny to play it, Padre.
Yeah, I played your character.
Yeah, thanks.
You died a lot.
You always like to say, oh, I'm hands-off, I don't want to play. And then I come back down and I've set up the 360 in the basement and you're just... Like, oh, it's your character. Yeah. Don't worry about it,
Brian. He's actually really good. He's really, really good. And so his rankings just keep going higher and higher. And then I play, and
sudden,
he's like, oh, my God, I've dropped 100 spots.
That is so weird. My kill-death ratio has plummeted. I like to blame you for that.
My death ratio is now positive. What's going on here? Yeah, I'm not good.
But if you haven't heard of Destiny, it's or the company Bungie, which I know you're a big fan of Halo, which is kind of hard to believe if nobody who plays video games hasn't heard of it. But if you haven't, this is a new game released by Bungie. It came out for the PS4, the Xbox One, the Xbox 360, and the PS3. So it's pretty well spread, but it's not... Oh, I'm still here. Don't worry, Destiny. But so we've been playing this a lot, and I figured maybe some people haven't played a first-person shooter MMO. This is kind of the first game that's meshed a lot of those ideas.
You got to explain that, because the MMO part is kind of new to FPS fans.
Right. So it's massively multiplayer online. And basically, the way it works in Destiny is there's a story, and it's a little convoluted, and you have to like go to Bungie's website to kind of learn more details. But generally, when you go into a large map, there'll be other people there playing with you. You can interact with them. Your first question was, can I shoot the other people?
I don't know why that cannot. Was my first question.
You can shoot at them, but it's more of a co-op experience.
Oh, okay.
And there is a separate part of the game, which is specifically for PvP, which is player versus player. And that's more like your Halo deathmatch kind of thing. So, but as far as the story goes, a giant ball, just know that a giant ball comes to Earth a few thousand years ahead from now and causes some mischief.
Okay.
The darkness comes, the Covenant, and and you shoot aliens and stuff.
And actually, what I love about this game is that it has Tyrell from Game of Thrones. What's his name?
Oh, Peter Dinklage, yeah.
Yeah, who's taking the part of Cortana in this game.
He's, yeah, your little companion that floats. He's a ghost. Another name.
No,
from
no, Padre. It's completely different than Cortana.
Yeah.
Completely different.
Totally. I know, actually, yeah.
There are absolutely no similarities to Halo in this game. But if you did enjoy Halo, the gameplay is
you
very
will
much
enjoy
like
this.
That.
Yeah.
But the things that they've added to it, which was the MMO part, is they've added gear tiers. So there's different colors for certain kind of gear. And there's different setups that you'll want to do when you're playing the environment versus when you're playing the actual like human players.
Right.
So that's the aspect we're going to take a look at today. So now that we've discussed some of the general stuff, this is the greeting screen. You get a ship, and this is my character. And there's a level cap. So there's level 20 is about as high as you can go as far as your level, but then the gear add-ons that you get as you play through the game add to your character's armor, makes them stronger, things like that.
And that's to keep it so that super powerful players don't just discourage the new players from coming in.
Right. Well, so this is the one of the more interesting aspects of the game is that your armor stats, they only work in the environment where you're playing the computer. So you look at my armor here, it says 229 is my stat on the armor. That only works when I'm playing the computer. When I go to play other players, what they've done is they've normalized everything. So your stats are equal to everyone else.
Okay. Which makes sense. Because, yeah.
Right.
I mean, you don't want someone who's been playing the game for a year to just be blowing out every newbie that comes
exactly.
in.
Exactly. Like, when you play Halo, it's not like anybody has any stat boosts. It's just everyone has a different weapon that they might like to use or something like that. So when you're playing PvP, you don't have to worry about your armor sets or anything. You could be a level 1 playing with level 20s. The only caveat to that is the weapons that you get through the game you get more familiar with them the longer you play. So I really like to use pistol, and you can go drill down into the certain stats. As you go through the game, you're able to add to certain weapons. So I've built up this pistol kind of the way I like it, and each gun has its own attributes that are different from other ones. But we'll have to get into that later. But so the attack is 201. That's pretty powerful in the environment. But when I play other players, it'll just be...
It gets leveled up.
It gets leveled up.
Right.
So,
but like most gaming systems, so it's balanced. So in other words, if it's more powerful, it's got a slower reload rate or smaller magazine. Mm-hmm. If it's ranged, it probably has decreased damage. But those are attributes that you can power up as you play the game.
Yes. The only part that makes a difference when you're playing other players, trying to look at the screen in my set right over here, is this. This is your armor rating, your recovery, and your agility. Now, those are all pretty obvious, but these are the stats that transfer over when you're playing against other players. So, Mike, there's three different classes in the game. I'm playing as a hunter, which is someone who does a lot of damage and is fast, but doesn't have a lot of armor. So I'm a little low on the armor, but I'm really fast when I'm playing other players. And then these are the different different perks that you get as you go through the game, and you can kind of increase your character's ability. So this is where you're going to want to change things when you're playing against other players. And you get two different, each character gets two different kinds of perks. And this one's called the Gunslinger. And this one is set for me for PvP. So I have a swarm grenade, I have better control when I jump. And these are all things that you build up over time playing through the right. game.
And all of these are different ways of building up the character the way that you want to play them. So,
exactly.
like, if you like getting in close, you're probably going to pick heavy weaponry and a lot of armor. Mm-hmm. If you like running and gunning, you probably pick a really fast character with ranged weapons, but then maybe one really powerful primary weapon.
Right.
So that when you do get close, you can shoot and then scoot.
My advice for people starting out the game, it's very frustrating when you first start playing against other people, because if they've already built up their weapons,
right.
you kind of get destroyed. Even though all the armor and everything and the weapons are normalized, you still get destroyed. And that's because if you start playing with a weapon that you get used to, you can use that against other players, and that's more important than the stats.
Right. Actually, something that I noticed in killing your character a lot
Thank you.
Was that the weapons that work well against the computer players are usually not the weapons that work well against people
right.
players.
If you're starting in PvP, I would say stick to the fast shooting auto rifles. Don't try and use pistols, because you have to be really accurate with that
right.
stuff.
Yeah.
If you don't get
human players move yeah. around a lot.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, I've been having a lot of fun playing this game. If you're doing environment stuff, then the stats totally matter. And if you're just starting out, just pick whatever has the best stats, is basically it. Don't worry about what your character looks like, because that's really superficial, but also...
Oh, you mean like that 12 hours that you play in order to change the look of your character?
Well, I mean, I like the way it
okay.
looks.
Okay, so that's what we've got for the novice. For the novices,
right.
look at the stat of the weapon, find it, get comfortable with a couple of different weapons so that you can choose. You can
right.
switch between the ones that are more effective for every mode of play.
Right.
What would you offer to, say, a more advanced player? Someone who's played this for a while, maybe they know the combat system. They've
right.
played all the Halo games, so they understand the controls. They've got that down. What's a tip for an advanced player?
A tip for a more advanced player is just understand that when you do get those higher level gear, you're going to have to add more stuff to it. So whenever you're out in the world, collect as much, like there's little items that you can collect in the world and pick up, and you're going to need that for later. And also, have friends to play with, because actually the neat thing that they've done.
That sounds so sad.
It does. But you need other people to play this with, which is kind of frustrating, because I'm on the 360 and Alex has an Xbox One, which
yeah.
he reminds me all the time about the resolution
does,
on the 360.
It does look so much better,
it does
Brian.
Look better on the One.
But we can't play together. So I've been going through the game and he's been going through the game, but when you link up with your friends, there's actually an end game what they call a raid.
Oh.
And it's called the Vault of Glass, and from everything, but you have to work up to it. And it sounds insane.
Like, that is very MMO. MMO
right.
is all about raids.
You go into like a dungeon, and you go in with your friends, and you have to coordinate a strike team of six of you and try and get through it. And if you die, you get kicked back to the beginning. So you really have to work together.
So Brian's tips, one, die a lot.
Yes.
Two, practice all your guns. Three, get a couple of friends. And four, make sure your friends are actually playing on the same platform. That last part kills, because, I mean,
yeah.
I've got people who are playing this on PS4,
mm-hmm.
on the One, and on the 360, and the fact that we can't play with
and
each other...
Patrick has the PS4, which he's playing.
So
he can't play with us.
We've got three people in the studio playing the game, but they're all yeah. on different systems, so forget it.
Yeah, and it's not on PC, which is kind of frustrating, too.
And it probably won't be on PC for a while.
There's rumors that it might be, but I wouldn't count on it. You know? And
that's why Burke is in the basement cursing, because he's done with Titanfall.
Although the nice thing that... Yeah, Titanfall, that game. I'm done with that game. The nice thing about it is if you buy the digital download version for the 360, you can upgrade to the right. one without having to rebuy the game for the next system.
Right.
Which makes sense.
Which is nice.
But I would not put it out of the realm of possibility of a game developer saying, hey, you bought the game on that system, so now you have to buy it again on the other system.
Actually,
so.
That's sort of the norm. This is the first time I've heard of a game developer saying, yeah, you know what? When you see someone playing it on the One, you're probably going to want to upgrade to the One.
Right.
So here's a free coupon.
And I've changed my mentality where I like having the cloud save my games, where I download the game. I don't have the physical box. Like, there might be certain games that I wish I had, like the Legendary. I think Alex bought the Legendary Edition, and that came with, like, a booklet and stuff. And that's cool, but I have too much stuff already. So I just want to save it and then be able to play it on a different system. Yeah.
Well, there you have it. That's your tips if you're just getting started in Destiny. Check it out. Available on PS4, on Xbox 360, and on the Xbone. On the One. probably not on the PC for a while, but it is a fun game. If you've played any of the Halo games, this will be immediately familiar for you. I don't mean that negatively.
How many times have you played Halo on Legendary, the same level over and over, just because you wanted to, like, master it?
Exactly.
It's kind of like that, but you do it co-op, and you get stuff.
You get stuff, right. Yeah, exactly.
Loot.
So it's like Halo, but you actually do get to level up the Master Chief.
And I think their idea is to make this, like, a 10-year-long process. Yeah. So, I feel like that's part of the reason why the story is a little vague at the moment, because that's going to be the expansion. But but if you do like it, they have an app, and you can download that to your iOS or Android device and kind of dig through some of the information that you get going through the game. And it's actually, the story is pretty fascinating, and I'm enjoying it a lot.
Coming soon to a console near you. Now, when we come back, we're going to be telling you about how Project Predator ended. Remember, we took a decent, a very nice turnkey gaming system when we decided, I wonder if we could up the stats. And we wanted to give you the information on what is the best bang for the buck. If you were going to have one of these PCs and upgrade it for the next generation of gaming, what should you be spending your hard-earned money on?
That was a lot of work.
It was a lot
of work. Not for me, for you, but...
It was benchmarking is not fun.
Because you had to do it once
and
with a certain configuration and then another configuration.
75 different benchmarking tries to get all my averages.
I appreciate the work
that
you put into
that,
Roger.
But you know what's not a pain in the butt? Finding a one-stop shop on the internet, someplace where you could easily publish your ideas, your pictures, your portfolio, your videos. Basically, a place to get noticed. Now, in the past, if we wanted to do this, you'd have to have a little bit of programming experience. You'd probably want to choose the best vendor for your domain and then for your hosting. And you needed to find the right package so that your website will look right, and probably need either programming experience or someone who has programming experience to customize the template that you've chosen from WordPress or Drupal to make it look right. Well, that's a headache, and there's no reason to do that. Because they're Squarespace. Squarespace is your one-stop shop for all your content distribution needs. If you want to start a website to show off your photography or your videography, or if you've got that great idea that you think is going to change the world, Squarespace makes it easy for you to get it out into the public, onto the internet. Squarespace is constantly improving their platform. It's one of the reasons why I like them so much. They are not content to stay with what they've got. They've got 25 beautiful templates for you to start with, and they recently added a logo creator tool. This is all part of their movement to give their customers ever-increasing value. They allow you to choose from these gorgeous templates that they've created to customize them to your liking, and they give you that tool like the logo creator so you can create your online branding. It's really, really that simple. It's also easy to use. If you need some help, Squarespace has live chat and email support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but you're not going to need it because there's a completely redesigned customer help site for easier access to self-help articles and video workshops. They also give you e-commerce. It's now available for all subscription plan levels, including the ability to accept donations, which is great for nonprofits, which is, you know, the organizations that I tend to run. And it means that you can set up cash wedding registries and school fund drives. It's also inexpensive, starting at just $8 a month, and it includes a free domain if you sign up for a year. Now, if you've ever designed something for the web, you know that there's a problem when you now try to look at it on a mobile device, on a phone or on a tablet. Well, you don't have to worry about that with Squarespace, because Squarespace has that built in to their back end. Their app for the iPhone and the iPad allows you to check site stats like page views, unique visitors, and social media. And with the blog app, you can make text updates, tap and drag images to change layouts, and monitor comments on the go, all while Squarespace customizes your site's look for each device that may look at it. Now, even their code is beautiful. This is important for me because I actually have a show here on the Twit Network called Coding 101. So I look at the code. I need to make sure that it's going to deliver the kind of code that I would actually write myself. And, yeah, if you take a look at it, it's gorgeous. It's beautiful. It's well done. It's attention to detail. Now, Squarespace also includes hosting so that they take care of it, which means you don't have to. You don't have to pay a separate subscription fee to have someone hold all your files. Squarespace does it all for that one low monthly fee. So here's what we want you to do. If you've got that next great idea, if you've got that next great portfolio, if you've got that wonderful project that you think everyone needs to see, try Squarespace with a 2-week trial that requires no credit card. Start building your website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code KNOWHOW to get 10% off and to show your support for KNOWHOW. We thank Squarespace for their support of KNOWHOW. A better web awaits, and it starts in your new Squarespace.
Yeah, Squarespace has made it so easy that the hardest part for me is remembering to put stuff up all night.
They can't help you with that.
I know.
Yeah, Squarespace is good at many things. Writing stuff for you, not so much.
I need to be on top of that.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do we have next, Padre?
What we've got is Project Predator.
Oh,
we started with a Acer Predator AG3 gaming desktop. Mm-hmm. We reviewed this thing on Before You Buy. Nice desktop. Great price performance.
I've been enjoying it.
You've been enjoying it. We haven't sent it back yet. We're really sorry, Acer, but we play Titanfall in it.
Just don't send us such good stuff.
Yeah, send us the junk, and we'll send it back right away.
Exactly.
But we wanted to see, well, I wonder what we could do to tweak it. There's a lot of times you buy that pre-made system, and you go, oh, well, I wish they had changed this. I wish they had changed that.
Right.
So we did that. We went ahead, and we changed out the memory, the video card, and the SSD. We replaced a hard drive to see where the best performance points are. And we've already gone through the memory. We've already gone through the video card. And Alex, here is the SSD.
The last component on our list for the upgrade your already pretty darn awesome gaming PC series is the hard drive. The biggest complaint I had about the Predator during our review of the system was that in this day and age, there isn't a really good reason to use a rotating drive as a system disk. And using a hard drive in a high-performance system can have major negative consequences for a performance machine. You may remember from a previous know-how segment that we replaced the hard drive in a Toshiba Tekra W50 desktop replacement with a mid-range Kingston KC300 SSD and saw a 150% performance increase, a clear indication that the high-performance CPU, GPU, and memory were being held back by slow storage. We wanted to see if we could get a similar performance bump out of the Predator. As before, follow the upgrading protocol. Unplug the external power, tap the power button to make sure that the power supply's capacitors are discharged, strap up, open the case according to your manufacturer's instructions, and behold the naked glory of your PC. I said behold it! In choosing your SSD, you'll have to consider performance, price, and longevity. The market is flooded with dozens of low-priced value edition SSDs that typically use aggressive compression algorithms with slower memory and controllers to make it seem as if they're achieving top-level throughput at a bargain basement price. There are also high-end units that have a terrible tendency to stumble in performance after only a few terabytes of data writes. You'll have to wade through reviews that you trust to find the model that you need. I chose the 240GB Kingston HyperX 3K SSD. Mostly because my personal experience with their mid and top tier units has been excellent. This monster is rated at 555 megabytes per second read and 510 megabytes per second write. It can be found online for less than $120 with a 3-year warranty. That places it in the upper echelon of performance, but the lower tiers of price. As with opening the case, upgrading a drive is a manufacturer-specific process that you'll need to dig through your manuals to find out. Or you could just start jiggling things till the drives fall out. In our PC, the upgrade process starts by pulling the drive cage from its rails so that we can access the drive mounts. As long as you've cleared the space, take a look at how many SATA ports are on your motherboard and how many are being used. In a system like the Predator, there are 4 SATA ports, with one being used by the existing hard drive, one being used by the optical drive, and one being used by the removable hard drive caddy. This leaves one port open for our SSD upgrade. Also, make sure that there are enough SATA power cables to power the SSD in addition to your existing devices. This is important because we want to be able to leave our existing drive in the case to facilitate the benchmarking process, and eventually to use it as storage for data and programs that I don't want cluttering the valuable high-performance space on the SSD. Quick note, any modern SSD that you buy will be rated for SATA Revision 3, capable of transferring 6 gigabits per second, what many will call SATA 6. If your desktop is a little older, it may not support SATA 6, and instead will be limited to SATA Revision 2, which tops out at 3 gigabits per second. The faster drives will work just fine in your SATA Revision 2 and lower systems, but you won't get top speed. In fact, with the Kingston HyperX 3K SSD performing near the practical maximum uncoded transfer rate of SATA Revision 3, dropping it into a SATA Revision 2 motherboard will cut its performance by about 40%. Now that we know we've got the power and the SATA ports to work with, let's get mounting. I know there are some builders out there who will think about skipping this step and instead just plug the SSD into power and a SATA cable and maybe put a single screw through the side, but don't do it. Sure, it's probable that nothing bad will happen, but you just bought a performance part and it deserves a decent mount. In other words, don't be that guy. Most modern PCs have mounting systems for both 3.5-inch and 2.5-inch storage units, so you don't need any additional hardware. However, some older systems don't have 2.5-inch mounting points. If that's the case with your PC, make sure you get an SSD kit that includes a bracket to adapt the 2.5-inch unit for a 3.5-inch mount. It is possible to clone your installation onto the SSD, but I wouldn't recommend it. Cloning a drive may be faster than a fresh installation, but you'll get all the junk from the original install. Better to start fresh with your brand new SSD. This means that you're going to need your install media, and you're going to have to go through the long, boring process of Windows install and upgrade. With the fresh installation of Windows 8.1 installed, we ran PC Mark 8 once again. Remember that our baseline benchmark scored 3934. With the SSD upgrade, but everything else the same, the Predator scored 4264. That's an 8.7% increase over baseline performance and a cost-performance ratio of 0.072% performance increase per dollar spent. By far, this is the highest performance boost of the three upgrades we attempted and the biggest bang for buck.
So the question was whether we could get more performance out of our Predator. And we could. In its best case scenario, we increased the performance by, 21.84%. That's not bad, especially since, we'll be talking about this, the price was actually decent on doing that. But I think there's one thing that you can say about turnkey gaming systems like the Predator, which is Acer obviously did their homework here because they're unlike when we did the Toshiba and we got a 150% boost, there was no single component that we could replace that would give us that massive boost, which means all the components are pretty close as far as what they could provide to the system.
So for the compromises that they had to make, it's pretty efficient.
Right.
You know, if this was FedEx, that percentage is pretty good.
That's pretty damn good. That would save you millions of dollars.
Yeah.
No, but you're exactly right, which is what you don't want to see is like what we saw in that Toshiba, where you replace the hard drive with an SSD and suddenly you get 150% performance boost.
Right.
That means it was a poorly designed system. No single component should be able to drag everything else down.
Yeah, and the price that it would have been to put an SSD in there was so minor.
Yeah.
Versus that performance. Right. It just is kind of, it's like, well. Yeah.
It's like, well, so you got to the end of the design process and you said, well, we need to chop $60 off of this.
Right.
Let's just put a hard drive in instead of an SSD.
The way I think of it, too, is like you just bought a sports car and they put like really crummy tires on it. So it's like, boy, this thing's great.
It's got a great amount of power. Just it won't get to the ground.
Exactly.
But cool. That's great. So again, looking at this project, a couple of things that we can say about it. First, the obvious winner is the SSD. I mean, if you're only going to be able to replace one thing, it got the biggest boost.
And you'll see that over a broader spectrum of things, in boot time, in the opening things.
Right,
you know.
Right. And exactly, it was like 8.4% boost just from replacing the SSD alone.
Whereas
right?
if you replace the video card, you're just going to see, you're going to see an improvement in video editing and in games.
Yeah. So the video card alone got us what? It got us a boost of something like 6%.
Okay, so yeah.
The boost from the SSD was about 8%. The boost from the memory was about 1.5%.
Because you hit that threshold where it doesn't make a difference.
It doesn't really help anymore. Yeah. But here's the thing. If you were to buy one component, you'd buy the SSD. Mm-hmm. You'd think that if you were to buy two components, you would buy the SSD and the next highest component, which was the video card.
Right.
Which is not true. Alex, if you go ahead and bring up that chart that we've got, this is the average of about 75 benchmarks that I did over the course of, I think it was a month.
Damn, Padre, you are thorough.
I am very, very thorough. Showing you what it would be. Like, for example, if you were to buy everything,
yeah.
So the 32 gigabytes of memory, the video card, and the SSD, it would cost you $825. It would only get you up to $4,256. And again, you're taking that penalty because you've increased the amount of memory.
That's right.
Right. But if you take a step down, if you look at what the highest performance boost was, it's also the best buy, which would be 16 gigabytes of memory, so half of the total amount that we replaced, mm-hmm. plus the NVIDIA 770, plus the SSD. That gets us 21.94% performance increase, $615 of cost. That means a 0.036% performance increase mm-hmm. per dollar spent. Now, look at the second best performance. The second best performance boost is actually that 16 gigabytes plus the SSD.
Right.
That gives us a 9.45% performance increase, $285, which means 0.033% increase per dollar spent. So it's not what you expect.
Right.
You would think that the video card, since it was the second highest performing, would always be in there. But no, if you want the best bang for buck without spending more than $300, it's not SSD and a new video card. It's SSD plus 16 gigabytes of memory.
Wow. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we're going to make all these numbers available so you can actually take a look at it. But it's pretty clear that when you're dealing with a balanced system,
yeah.
like a turnkey gaming system in which the manufacturer has already done its homework to make sure that all the components are pretty much, you know, at equal levels, there's nothing that's dragging down the numbers too much, mm-hmm. you're going to have to look at increasing all the components
right.
for the boost, not just a single one.
Wow. Yeah. That was... Bravo, Padre.
It was fun.
That was a lot of work.
It was fun. I got to play with the Predator.
One question I would have, though, is what if you were to do a hybrid drive instead of an SSD?
That's a very good question. There's a lot of people in the chat room who are asking about that. Hybrid drives are less expensive.
Right. More memory.
You get much more capacity. And the idea is you have a spinning drive co-located with a bit of hybrid memory. So, for example, I think the newest one from Seagate has up to 16 gigabytes of SSD on top of like a 1 terabyte rotating platter, which is a great idea.
Right.
It does speed things up. Here's my thing.
Mm-mm.
It's actually just a tiny bit more expensive to get a high performance, like 240 gigabyte SSD plus
for
a 1 terabyte rotating drive.
And you'll see the boost
it's
way
crazy,
more.
Crazy, crazy boost. So if you're running a desktop, which means you've got the space, I would not recommend a hybrid drive. I've mm-hmm. run hybrid drives in desktops. They're great. They're fine. But
yeah.
you're always thinking, well, why am I putting up with this? I've got the space. I should just drop in an SSD and be done with it. If you've got a laptop and you need a lot of space and you've got a laptop that only has one drive bay, that's where I think the hybrid drives make the most sense. Because mm-hmm. 240 gigabytes or maybe 512 gigabytes just may not be enough. And it is kind of pricey to get a larger SSD drive versus, say, a hybrid drive, a 500 gigabyte one that will cost you $70, that will give you decent, you know, halfway to the max of an SSD performance with all that extra space. That's where I think it makes sense. But in a desktop, no.
Yeah, you don't need to maybe compromise that.
You don't.
When you have that much space.
Exactly. Yeah. Cool. If you aren't space limited, just use two drives.
Yeah.
Have your speed drive and have your storage drive.
That's what I do. I have one big drive for all my photos and videos, and then I have a smaller drive that I just load my games and my OS on. So
yeah, we've got like specs in the chat room who says, "Oh, I only want drive with the benefits of both," but that's the problem. If you've got a laptop that's space limited, so you can only replace one drive, mm-hmm. that totally makes sense. In a desktop, you're not going to be paying a whole lot less, and the performance boost, the performance hit, is going to be quite large.
Yeah.
You can't compare an SSD to a hybrid.
Right.
The hybrid will lose each and every single time, especially once you get out of the benchmarking cases, because benchmarks might write just a little bit of data,
mm-hmm.
you know, 10 gigs, so that it stays within the cache. But once you get into real-world applications where you're going to be reaching all over the drive for the different programs, you see the performance just plunge.
So the sacrifice for being a jack-of-all-trades is that you're not a master of one. Like
exactly.
An SSD.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, so I'd say My personal advice is, unless you've got a laptop, don't consider a hybrid drive. If you've got a desktop, you know, get an inexpensive SSD and a large hard drive. Right. You'll pay less than a hybrid drive, and it will be faster.
Very cool.
Yeah. All right. So that's the end of Project Predator. I'm thinking what we have to do now.
Don't take it away.
Yeah, no, I have to. Actually, what I was thinking is we've got older parts, so we might just
build something.
Hey, Acer, I don't know what happened to the Predator. Like, it's a 386.
This case is full of candy.
Pinball parts in here. No, but I'd like for them to send me a non-gaming system. So, you know, a desktop that you might just have bought at Costco or Best Buy, and then, something that's not optimized, and then see if maybe we could give it a performance boost. That sounds a lot more fun.
Yeah, and I could see a lot of that being a lot of people's situation. But if we do that, I'm worried about power supplies, because a lot of the time, that would probably be the first thing we would have to switch out.
Exactly. Yeah, you go to those budget machines, and they've got like 230-watt power supplies.
Right, it's like bare minimum.
The video card alone, like a 770, is going to pull more power than that. So
maybe we should get Ryan Shrout and some of those guys, and Patrick Norton to help us out.
I'd really love to have them on.
I know. That'd be
Squee!
We'll talk to them.
Okay, we'll talk to them. Now, before we go, we wanted to tease the next segment. We announced a while back that we're actually heading into our Project Quadcopter. This has been much requested. People have been asking us how they build a quadcopter from the ground up. Right. We're going to teach you. Now,
what?
The project has grown. It was originally going to be like a four-week thing, and then I'm like, I think we need six
weeks.
And
then you got really into it.
I got really into it, and it's going to be a 12-week project. We're gonna show you each and everything that you need to know in order to fly a quadcopter, because it's not just a toy. I mean,
no.
You're dealing with some serious technology, especially the LiPo batteries. So if you don't treat them right, it's not just that it's not going to work. It's just, you know, you could die.
And don't fly it over any national parks either.
Yeah,
you know, but
yeah, that'd be bad. But before we get into that will be in 2 weeks, we need to teach you some of the basics of flight. A quadcopter, of course, is not a plane. It's a very different type of vehicle.
Yes.
But the principles of flight for a vehicle, so, you know, why planes work, why propellers work, and how you generate lift is going to be very important when we start talking about quadcopters.
Well, isn't it a quadcopter kind of just, it's got a propeller and it's got four of these like this?
No.
No, that doesn't work that way?
I mean, yes, but no. There's a lot more electronics that are involved.
Right.
But what we're going to be doing next week is we're actually going to show you how planes generate lift. Because once you understand that, it makes it easy for you to understand how quadcopters work.
And you think you might know how lift works, but then you retold me.
I was kind of totally bummed out about this. I was doing all the research for this, and I'm sure it's going to hit some of you. I don't want to spoil the surprise here.
Right. We'll tease that.
But essentially, if you're older than 20 years old, what you learned about how planes fly in school is completely wrong. And I'm bummed out about that.
I know. It's like one of those foundations.
It's like, why did you lie to me?
It's still, I don't know. It's just the way I've always visualized it, I guess, has changed.
Right.
So
I know. It doesn't change the fact that it does work.
Right.
And actually what you've been taught still does apply. It's just that's not the reason why planes stay in the air.
But we'll figure that out later.
Now, we know that this has been a lot of information. We want to make sure that you can get it in a nice, easy, organized way. So if there's any project here, from the tips that Brian had about Destiny to Project Predator, if you want to see where we bought our parts, how much they cost, and what kind of performance we got out of each, we'll show you all the data. Just make sure to go over to our show notes page, which, Brian, is where?
twit.tv/KH, and then past episodes, ways to subscribe. After this Predator project that you did, some dang good show notes and graphics.
Yeah, good graphics, good show notes.
You stepped it up, partner.
We did. Dang. That's how we roll, man. You inspire me. You make me complete.
You know, you're just making more work for me now. I'm going to have to like come up with Destiny graphics. This is the armor that you'll need if you want this percentage of
I hand drew this. Wow.
But yeah, that's where all that stuff lives. And then there's a way if you want to communicate with us or show us your projects. And
send us an email at knowhow@twit.tv, which we will promptly discard.
I hate email.
No, we don't do email. Instead, go where?
The Google Plus community. Go to Google Plus, search for Know How, and this is a place that now we have over 7,000 members, and people are always posting questions that they'd like to see on the show, which they promptly get answers a lot of the time. And
it's not from us. That's what I love about that group. I mean, there are people with great questions, and all the other experts just jump in. In fact, there's some really active members of the know-how group. You know what we got to do? We got to give them a reward somehow. At some point, we have to have like a know-how meetup. Hmm. Just get all the members of the group over.
Do like a hangout or something.
That'd be kind of fun.
That would be fun.
Yeah, it's a
why
way
haven't
to
we
get
done
back.
That? Yeah, we'll do it. We'll do that. Well,
you know why? Because we need two more predators to be able to do that.
Oh, Martha, what a shame. I guess if they happen to show up here, we might have to do that.
That's like a lot of whoring. We just did a lot of sweat whoring. That's okay. That's okay. Yeah, don't forget that's not the only place you can find us on the socials. You'll also find us on Twitter, twitter.com/PadreSJ. That's @ Padre SJ. If you go there, you'll find out what I do in between shows. I actually do 4 shows here on the Twit TV network. Yeah. I've got this Week in Enterprise Tech on Mondays at 2:30. I've got Padre's Corner at 7:30 on Tuesdays. And then on Thursdays, I have 2 shows. I have at 11 o'clock, Know How.
And Coding.
And Coding 101 at 1:30. And actually, you're part of that team as well.
That's right. I'm on the other side of the screen, which actually Alex Gumpel is sitting behind right now.
Speaking of Alex Gumpel, he is sort of our resident expert in flight, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So why is he like doing stuff?
I don't know. We'll have to bring him on for that.
Yeah, he's shaking his head at us. That's not good. Where can they find you on the Twitters?
You can find me at @cranky_hippo on the Twitters.
Yeah, and if you want to find out what kind of grief we give to Alex, make sure to follow him on Twitter at ANELF3. That's an elf 3. Mm-hmm. He's on Twitter.com as well. Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballasier.
I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know,
go do it. All right, we're not doing a plane segment.
Goodbye.